Hello friends, and welcome once again to the Kings of Anglia podcast. This one's episode number 36, I think. Mark Heath here with you as ever. Andy Warren with me.
Hello. 36, I think, yes.
Hutch. And the Dr. Stuart Watson.
All right.
Now then, boys, obviously we've got to start today. There's been some very, very big news since we last recorded this podcast. I certainly didn't see it coming, and I don't think either of you did, really, if you're honest. Who would have thought that Monster Munch, Pickled Onion, would win the Kings of Anglia Great Crisp Debate?
The crisps that rule them all.
Yeah, 41% ran away with it.
The people have spoken, I think.
I jest, of course. I jest. There was some busy stuff happening last week, and you were both at the heart of it. Ipswich Town have got a new manager, Hollywood Hurst. Already seems ages ago. Has long gone after just 15 games. And Paul Lambert is the new man in charge. Ex-Norwich. Very different character. Different CV. Very different experience as well. If I could just start then, boys. We're going to ignore send general banter off on shore leave today, Stu. So you'll be pleased about that. and let's start just with a kind of snap take from you both on Lambert, the new man.
What a crazy week it's been when you actually sit back and think about it, that less than a fortnight ago we spent half an hour talking nonsense, and now
that wasn't nonsense.
and now here we are. Mad week. I'm still kind of processing my thoughts of it all. We've been to Fulham. We've been to Leeds away, we've been to Millwall away, we've had a manager out, we've had a manager in. To sum it up, I think it was probably the right decision on both counts with Mr. Hurst and Mr. Lambert, I think.
Okay. Hutchie?
Yes, we are sitting here in a position where Ipswich are bottom of the Championship, 5 points from safety. But, and it doesn't please me to say it, I feel more optimistic about that changing now that the events of the last 7 days have happened, rather than the way things were going before. I think the move has given them a chance of getting themselves out of an incredibly tricky situation, which is going to be so hard for Ipswich and Paul Lambert to navigate, but I think they've got a better chance of doing it now that change has been made.
Yeah, I think both Andy and I probably want to make the point that we're both saddened, really, that it didn't work out for Paul Hurst and Chris Doig. I think in the summer, with the majority of the fan base, although you can never speak on behalf of everyone, but I think he was the type of appointment that people wanted post-Mick McCarthy. Most people saw it as quite a refreshing appointment, someone from the lower leagues that was going to look at a long-term plan and a way to kind of get the club moving forwards rather than just treading water. But unfortunately, everything that could go wrong kind of did go wrong, and you can go back through those 149 days and unravel it and pick it to pieces. And you know, we've done all of the debates about too much change too soon, maybe some of the blunt words were a little bit too strong from the start, maybe. I even just look back at certain games that, you know, had they won some of those fine margin games early on, the whole mood would have been completely different. But they're all ifs, buts and maybes, and it didn't happen, and they got to game 15, and as Andy said, at that juncture, could you really see them picking up and picking up soon? I hate to say it, I think it had gone too far, and now they've, as Andy says, got a far, far better chance of getting out of it now, I think.
They're in deep doo-doo though, aren't they?
Oh yeah, big time. This is Mick McCarthy doo-doo. 2012 territory.
Absolutely.
I know that's a name we're not to speak of. We're ridiculously now two managers removed from Mick McCarthy.
Yeah.
Stu's shaking his head. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Back to April, and Mick McCarthy's still in charge of Ipswich Town. We're sat here now with Paul Lambert, but we're back to that territory. You know, what was it he used to say? Miracles only happen in the Bible, but it's a big ask. It is a big ask, but I'm more confident they can do it now that a change has been made.
Two things to mention before we jump on to the actual happenings of last week, and maybe a little peek behind the curtain for the listeners. Stu wrote an excellent comment piece on the day that Hurst got the old heave-ho, which included the line, "and that's why I'm sad," quite a lot. That was the payoff line. Stu was certainly very sad. I think we all were. I jumped on the Hollywood Hurst and shiny white teeth and new way of doing things and all that sort of stuff. I still can't believe in a way that's over so quickly. So yeah, that was certainly the prevailing mood last week. And also, Stuart, it occurred to me that you never actually saw Hurst win a game.
I didn't know. I wasn't at Swansea, so...
Only win in his storied town career.
Didn't see Paul Stuart Hurst win a competitive game of football.
Yeah.
He never won a game at Portman Road. He never won a game on English soil as well, competitive game, given that win came at Swansea.
Wasn't good, was it? Let's be honest.
No. But, you know, as I say, it could have been so different. Mm. And what I do want to put on record is that I've made a lot more phone calls to people right at the heart of things in the last few days. And unfortunately, history will probably look back on those 149 days with a sense of ridicule. It looks rather ridiculous. They've updated the managerial leaderboard. What's it called? The
Roll of Honour.
Yeah. The club. And
that was stark, wasn't it? Know, seeing that today.
Seeing that there puts it in black and white. You know, I think history will look back on it, you know, as I say, with a sense of ridicule, which I think is unfair. And from the phone calls I've made, it saddens me that a lot of the rumour and speculation is now just become firmly part of the narrative now, that they upset people and man management was lacking. And I guess Matt Holland's piece on Talk Sport has almost legitimised a lot of that. But I think there's been fault on various sides of things along the way. Perhaps a little bit of player power there as well. Maybe they weren't afforded the respect from day one because of the background that they had from the lower leagues that someone like a Mick McCarthy and Paul Lambert will have from day one, Champions League winners as players, Premier League managers in the past. So I think in some ways there were a lot of things against them from day one, and they probably, looking back on it, really needed to hit the ground running to make a success of it. And unfortunately they didn't, and things unravelled fairly quickly from there. But the show moves on, and
indeed,
here we are.
So let's go back. We'll take you back in time to last week. I don't know, should we start Leeds? Obviously, they lost 2-0 at Leeds. You're both back in Suffolk very early Thursday morning, 3 a.m. Stu, you were back in the office. Basically, the way it was going to work is Andy was going to have a day off on Thursday. Stu, you were going to work from home, so you could have a bit of a lie-in, and then maybe a little bit more relaxed and sit in the office and sit at home in your pants or whatever. But you were back in the office pretty much by 10:30 the next morning.
In my pants, yeah.
Yeah, I was making you lots of coffees. I didn't expect you to come in your pants. That was a nice touch. So can we take the listeners a little bit behind the scene, peek behind the curtain in terms of what was going on? You know, how did it all come about? How much can we say?
This is where Andy and I have to be very careful.
Of course.
As I'm sure people at home will know, that there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make it out into the public domain, and there are sources that we have to stand by and not reveal too much. But I think all we can say is that we probably were on top of this as much as we ever have done in terms of reporting on Ipswich Town between the two of us. I think we were pretty close to various different parties, whether it be the people directly involved, whether it be people behind the scenes at Ipswich making decisions, whether it be people close to players. And it didn't come as a surprise on Thursday. That's probably about as far as we can take it. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to work out that the announcement of Lambert came almost immediately off the back of the Hurst sacking announcement, and like it or not, that is the world of football, and you know, that's business.
It's pretty murky, isn't it? To, you know, it is painfully obvious that managers, and Paul Lambert certainly wasn't the only manager, were being sounded out behind the scenes, and that's why it was able to happen so quickly. It is sad. It's sad, and it must be hurtful as a person to know that's going on behind your back, I guess, behind, but that's the game they're in, and you know, the people within football, they know that, they know the game they're in, they know how it works, they've probably been on the other side of it before as well, and if they haven't, they will be in the future, and that's how it all happened so quickly. But I was at Jimmy's farm at this point, so I'm having a lovely day.
Well, last Thursday,
yeah, great time.
Yeah, no, I called you in like a bastard of a boss. You'd have come in anyway, I know you would. So how long?
That's a good point, sorry, just to go back, that Paul Hurst rocked up at Ipswich Town the day after the playoff final. So you know, it's worked probably in two ways for him. You know, I'm sure he'd been speaking to Ipswich Town. Again, I'm probably not breaking any confidence here. I think people can probably work out that those conversations started before then, and now he's been on the receiving end of it.
How long do you reckon Hirsty'd been a dead man walking for then? We're talking, I mean, because obviously he got his first win against Swansea. There were rumours for a long time, weren't there, that Evans was going to pull
the rumours started a long time ago from sort of the Brentford game onwards. Mm. My understanding was the QPR was the tipping point, that as it went on, I think Evans was prepared to overlook a lot of the noise that was coming both from inside and outside the camp. Mm. He was desperate for this to work, fully aware that he'd have a bit of egg on his face if he kind of reversed quite a bold summer decision quite early. The Swansea win gave him a lot of hope, and I think he was genuinely hoping they'd kick on from there. But it wasn't just the defeat to QPR.
Mm.
It was the nature of that defeat that I think that was the tipping point. And I think the wheels then very much were in motion from that weekend onwards.
Mm.
I don't know what he was thinking, but I have to imagine that Paul Hurst probably saw this coming before it, and during his pre-match press conference for the Leeds game, some of the comments
certainly
in there,
sounded like that, didn't it?
Yeah, that, you know, he must have had an inkling at that time. I think he used the phrase, "and there's something else I'm not happy about," during that press conference, which could be all manner of things, but it could well be rumblings of, things going on.
He went down swinging in that press conference. I mean, we all looked at each other afterwards, and I kind of said, "That's like a parting shot of someone," and he certainly kind of was taking his shots, wasn't he, sort of saying there's so much that needs to change here. And
well, that's almost a podcast sort of in itself, yeah, discussing that, because a lot of what he said, you kind of, after the shock of almost hearing him say it, you kind of nod along and think,
he's got a point
in many ways. You're talking sense.
What were the points he made? He sort of said, well, the argument was, oh, we changed too much too soon, and it was naive to think that all these lower league signings were going to do it together. But he makes the point that, you know, I was told when I got this job that fans were kind of getting a bit bored of a certain type of signing, alluding to the kind of short-term experience sticking plasters under Mick McCarthy, and that they wanted actually for us to sign lower league players that perhaps would grow over time. And, you know, various other things, as Andy says, that he's actually probably quite right, but you just wonder whether he needed to do all of that so soon. I just think having
finished...
In one
summer.
Exactly, in one summer. You know, he's taken a long time to get this opportunity at a job like Ipswich.
Mm.
You know, maybe just ease yourself into it a little bit, you know, a little bit earlier. You know, the post-match Braintree in pre-season, he really got stuck into the players. Exeter, he really got stuck into the players. You know, maybe hold that back for just a few months down the line before you go in all guns blazing. But
I was going to ask you actually whether, you know, in both your opinions, whether there was, obviously Hurst gave an interview to the Sun on Sunday, wasn't it? Whatever, where he said he had no regrets about what he'd done at Town. Did he say there were things he'd change? Or
in one breath he said no regrets, and he said, and of course there probably would be other things that he would change.
Yeah.
I know there's things that he would change. Of course he would. You know, he's left, and probably the too much change too soon would be the one. But, you know, Andy and I were talking earlier, how much of that was in his control, really? I think it all started with the Adam Webster sale, which at that moment in time, he'd been told you need to sell players to raise your own funds. £3.5 million on the table for a very good defender, but one that hadn't played a great deal of football in the previous 2 years. Mm. I could understand why they said yes to that one, and the rest kind of snowballed from there, didn't it?
They needed to bring in players. If you looked at what they actually had at that point, a lot of players had left. 10 players had left on free transfers of all sorts of kinds. Your Carrioles, your Gleeson, Higham, Brew, McGoldrick was off the balance sheet. They needed to bring in players, so there needed to be an element of change within the squad. But the problem was, for me, that so many of them became nailed on, needed to start games as a unit, and I think that's where the problem really came, because I think at a high there was 8-3 ratio new players to older to players that inherited, and I think that's where the problem began. Not bringing them in the first place, but needing 8 players to step up.
It's a shell of a squad, wasn't it, by the time you actually took out who had left, and then you go on to the other 3 key players that were sold: Garner, Waghorn. I've mentioned Webster. You know, all 3 of those, we're told, wanted to leave for various different reasons. Garner wanted to go up north, certainly. Waghorn had his head turned by Lampard and Derby County. You don't keep players that don't necessarily want to be at the club. Could they have done more to... Would Mick McCarthy have persuaded them to stay? Could they have done more to keep them? Who knows? But the bottom line is, I don't... Even Hurst said, I think he was surprised by the amount of change. I think a lot of it, you know, just happened organically and he had to roll with those punches. And that was going to be a big ask for anybody to kind of settle down that squad after so many changes. But the caveat to that is, perhaps Hurst didn't help himself with the chopping and changing that followed. You know, I think the number of changes week to week probably didn't help though that gelling process.
You're doing that, showing you.
I'm doing this, showing my workings again. Yeah,
we worked out that this is how Stewie answers questions. He gives his answer at the start, and then he shows his working out in the next sort of 15 minutes or so. The answer. What I was going to say is, for me as an outsider, obviously I am here, but I'm not with the club every day. The Exeter City thing, when they lost in the cup, was something that stuck me at the time, that, oh God, he's just come in and now he's just firing shots at everyone, at his players. And that, obviously, then we had the Chambers angry interview afterwards and that sort of thing. For me, talking about regrets, that would probably be one where maybe you'd think he went a little bit too early there. He's obviously, one of the issues at Town is you've got a very strong group of characters in the dressing room. Chambers is, you know, a very, very influential captain. That's not breaking any secrets, is it? He's very powerful in that dressing room, and coming in and taking shots at some of the players when you've got that kind of dynamic, I think, as you said earlier as well, with Hurst coming from a lower league and Doyle coming from a lower league, whether they had that kind of credit in the bank that Roy King would or a Paul Lambert would now to kind of say those kind of things, they're not going to go as well when they work in the lower league. But maybe when you step up a level and you've got players on 12 grand a week and stuff and you've got someone coming in and saying that.
Exeter was a circumstance thing, I think, that brought that one about, in that, one, we've spoken about, if they'd won the shootout, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Two, they were flying back from that game, were they not? They had to rush to get that flight, and Hurst came out to do that presser incredibly quickly. He did the club interview first, which was by far the more scathing.
That was the fire one, wasn't it?
And then he stepped aside and did the sort of the rest of us, the radio and the media. Maybe if he'd had a little bit more time to cool off after what was a very disappointing evening, a little bit more time, that might have gone differently as well. It's just these circumstances we've spoken about that could have been different, but you're right, it came out, and then you get the Chambers response after that, which I watched back the other day, and it still has...
He was pissed off, wasn't he? I mean, okay.
Not a lot of luck as well. Let's talk about a couple of red cards.
Injuries.
Eden, Nsiala, the Walters injury, you could argue that was perhaps a little bit self-inflicted as well, but certain things didn't go against them at certain times, and some of it was self-inflicted, yes, some of it was bad luck. It all went into the mix.
Well, shall we draw a line under the Hurst era? Is there anything else that you want to say about that? Where do you reckon he might crop off again now? Because obviously he's got to go back down a level, hasn't he?
I don't know. We'll see him again, I'm sure. We'll see him back in management. I don't know where he ends up. We were looking down the League One table, certainly he won't. I can't imagine he'll be getting a championship chance again. He'll have to earn his own way into the championship.
We were looking at Bradford, weren't we?
Bradford are bottom of League One at the moment. Big club, can't be at the bottom of League One. You know, if the circumstances are right, I'm sure that job would appeal to him as a Sheffield boy. He needs to go away and rebuild now, because you know, it's a tough mark to take on the CV. There's such a short reign when your big chance comes, but where he emerges, I don't know. He's the only promotion he actually has on his CV is National League to League Two with Grimsby. Nearly obviously got one in League One last year, but as time goes on, that will become less and less relevant. But there's clearly something there with him. He's clearly a good manager. He clearly knows what he wants to do, and he just needs to find the right place for that to work for him. And I sincerely hope that it does, because he's a good man as well.
Could be the making of him, couldn't it? I mean, I think all of us as well, we all really liked him. You obviously dealt with him a lot more than I did, but you both really liked him, didn't you? He's a good, solid, decent bloke.
Yep.
So fingers crossed he does re-emerge and goes on to have great success in the game. Let's move on, harshly, to Mr. Lambert, who now is the man in the hot seat. What can I just get your initial impressions when you first heard the news? We should say that in terms of the day we had last Thursday, so you'd obviously working on very, very little sleep. You're both used to that as fairly new fathers anyway. But So all day Thursday we've been working on the story and getting all sorts of content ready, videos, all that sort of stuff. And then when the time came to push the button, our system just went,
the button didn't work.
And we broke a world record for profanity in Archant Towers. I was effing and jeffing all over the shop at the computer. So by the time it actually emerged on our website, I think there were probably some villagers in rural Belize who already knew about it. That was very frustrating. That's a peek behind the scenes. The computers here are not great, or the system here. But in terms of the kind of your initial thoughts on Lambert, because obviously you've got the Norwich thing and all that sort of stuff, but you were both straight away, you were both kind of, that's probably, he's probably the right man for the job that he comes into.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think so. I think we'd obviously had an inkling change was on the way, so you really start to look at the managers that are out of work, because it was quite clear that Ipswich were going to have to get someone that wasn't in a job mid-season. And for me, I started to scratch them off one by one. Moyes, Allardyce,
Nick McCarthy,
Steve Bruce. They were all going to be financially out of Ipswich Town's remit. It had to be someone that was experienced for this situation. I just think they couldn't take another risk given the situation they were in. And the more I thought about it, the more Paul Lambert probably made sense in terms of his CV. It was only really the Norwich thing that maybe put a bit of doubt in people's minds. But for me, I've kind of said it, that I think you have to park that to one side now. He's the best of the realistic pool of managers that were available to Ipswich. For me, he's the best option. And I thought his press conference today only kind of backed that up in my mind. I thought that was very impressive.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. The parallels, though, between him coming in and Mick coming in, you were saying staggering. You were doing a little... You got a feature coming out later this week about the comparisons between the two sides. But the actual circumstances in which he came in are almost identical, aren't they, in terms of... Way you've got the 5 points thing, the dates are incredibly similar, the scores around the time of the guy coming in, incredible.
Do you want to know something else a bit freaky as well?
Yes.
In both of Paul Lambert's last two championship jobs, his first game has been against Preston in November.
And what did he win?
He didn't lose. He won 2-1 away and drew another 1-0.
Unbeaten record going
unbeaten
into
against
into
Preston
six
in
pointer
November.
On Saturday. Mm. So let's talk there, Stu. You touched on it very briefly, but the press conference today. It wasn't like pay-per-view viewing. There was no kind of bold proclamations, but what it was, as you said in your, again, a comment piece you can read now online and read in the paper tomorrow, it was reassuring. There was a calmness, a confidence about him that makes you think, actually, if anyone can get Town out of this deep hole they've dug for themselves, he could well be the man.
Yeah, I thought it was only 20-odd minutes, which is actually shorter than some of the standard pre-match press conferences that we've been having. And I think maybe, hate to say it, that might have been something that went against Paul Hurst, is that he maybe said too much,
too honest,
and you have to play the game a little bit in this business, and that might be something that Paul Hurst has realised in hindsight. But I thought Paul Lambert came into it, we've heard from a lot of our colleagues and friends in the media in the last few days about what to expect from Paul Lambert, and I think it's a fairly mixed bag. Some people have found him incredibly difficult to deal with and painted this picture of a fiery Glaswegian that is not going to be easy to deal with. But I've spoken to a lot of other people that have worked at football clubs and worked with him in his staff to say that that's actually a bit of a public persona, and behind the scenes, you know, he can be quite soft and friendly and have a laugh. And I thought he portrayed that side of himself today. And, you know, any thoughts that he would come in all guns blazing and telling a few home truths, I think he's looked at this situation and he's sounded a few people out and they've said, actually, there's a bit of a fear factor, confidence is low, you need to go in and make people feel good about themselves again. And for me, that's exactly the right route he's got to go down.
He's spoken about fun today, hasn't he?
He said fun a lot, didn't he? Yeah. So that's kind of telling as well, isn't it, don't you think? That
for everybody, he's spoken about fun for him, fun for his players, and fun for the fans. And, you know, if he can bring a bit of fun back, this is what we were talking about in April, wasn't it? About bringing a bit of fun back, and we're still there now. But if he can do that, it'll go a long way towards getting themselves out of this mess.
What I've been told from guys who've worked with him before from the media side is that he is an absolute master motivator. He will, we talked about how ironic it would be if he was the man to finally beat Norwich with Ipswich, and I was told that that would not be surprising at all, because he'll have Town players ready to run through brick walls
you know, he's a real kind of fire and brimstone motivator of men, which is what ultimately you're going to need in this situation. Maybe you haven't got the talent that you'd like to have, but a well motivated, kind of correctly fired up squad can do wonders, can't they? And that starts straight away, because going into this game this weekend, I mean, what a massive game to have as your first game.
Huge, huge game.
Well, two games in fact, but to have a home game against Preston first and then Reading away before the next international break, that's gigantic, isn't it? I mean, lose these two games and they really are sailing pretty close to the wind.
Yeah. There were questions today at the press conference about January transfer funds and this £10 million war chest that's been spoken about in the national media. But I think we're all of the agreement that we've got to get there first. Like, Ipswich Town's destiny could well be written in the 10 games before that's even a factor in all of this. And obviously these two are the first of those, and huge ones at that against teams around them. So the next 10 games before January, for me, that will shape whether this is possible.
Absolutely, or it could all be done and dusted, couldn't it?
Look back on those 2012 comparisons, and Ipswich, after, well, when Mick came in, they were bottom and five adrift, exactly the same as now. And when they got to the 15 game mark, they were still bottom and 5 points adrift. Now Ipswich won, I think, seven games in that 10 game run up to the new year. They won seven of those 10 games, and you know that puts it into, and that went right down to the wire that year. And that was a little bit of a different year, because everyone down the bottom seemed to win every week, and I think Peterborough ended up going down with a record points total that year. So chances are that might not be the same, but can you see Ipswich Town winning seven of their next 10 games, or going on that sort of run?
Not if they don't win the next two, I can't.
Exactly.
That's what worries me.
That's the situation.
That's
that
what
is the
me.
Situation. So for all this talk about going out in January and splashing the cash, as Andy says, it could be too late by then. This is a real test of a manager. Because the true test of a manager is being able to get the best out of what you've got and do it quickly. So,
it's worth remembering though, isn't it? Obviously McCarthy won his first game 1-0 at Birmingham, which is a bit of a smash and grab, but then they actually got tonked, didn't they, the next two games? They lost, was it 5 and 6-0?
5-0 at Palace, 6-0 at Leicester, with the two away games after that. But crucially, they won their first game at Birmingham, and they, looking back on that, you know, they rode their luck. They got an early goal. Zigic, the big beanpole striker, missed a couple of real sitters that night, but they got that first win, which I think just settled things down, and then they won their first home game. They beat Burnley 2-1, which I think is needed to get the crowd on side straight away. So, you know, getting that first win and you know, showing it to your home fans is going to be massive for them.
Time will tell, and I don't want to be too negative, but I think I put a tweet out that said, in my 7+ years of sports director, I've never been so worried about a team. I mean, even when Mick came in, it never even crossed my mind they'd go down. I always had faith they'd stay up, but this time, I don't know, it just has a different feel. We shall see. We shall see. Should we take some questions, boys? Mailbag?
Let's hit the mailbag.
Simon says, if the reported...
Put your hand on your nose.
If the reported £10 million war chest is true, who would you like to see Paul Lambert go for? Or should it all be spent on crisps and big porkers in the press room?
Well, yes.
Yes, Simon. Monster Munch pickled onion, the way to go.
Apparently. Imagine how many big porkers you could get for £10 million.
Be worth every penny. So, in terms of who, we haven't really touched on who he could bring in. I mean, obviously at the moment he can only bring in free agents. Yep. We know Darren Bent is not going to be one of them. They didn't get on very well at Aston Villa.
No.
There's no one really out there who you think immediately go and get him, is there? That strikes you as like a solution. Because what they need is, at the moment you've got Jackson and Sears, who are kind of the same player, that ideally wouldn't be playing together. You need that kind of big target man striker. But there's not really anyone out there, is there, like that? And Ichibi? He would probably cost a fair bit.
Paul Hurst needed a player like that, and we said then there wasn't really anybody out there.
Yeah.
And there still isn't. So, like Sue said, a test of a manager, and it's going to be intriguing to watch what he does with this group.
Yeah.
But he still only has two strikers, and they are very similar.
What's the timescale on Harrison coming back? Do we know?
He should be getting.
Should be getting
close. It may. 6 weeks from the last weekend of September, so maybe after the international break.
He's in the physio room today. He wasn't training. I saw him.
He's not on the grass.
He's not on the grass yet. Hughes and Bishop worked today, because we filmed the first 10 minutes of training today, so we could see who was out there. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
But, Harrison would be the one, I think. But is he going to hit the ground running straight after an injury like that. For me, the team on Saturday that Clue picked was probably just about the most balanced team that he could put out with the players at his disposal. I liked it on paper. I think if you've got Sears and Jackson up front, you need Dzel in there because you need someone to give them passes on the deck. There's no point going long to those two. And that's the slight concern, that was perhaps the most balanced, arguably the best team that they could put out, and they still lost 3-0.
Yeah.
But the big but is, if you can cut out the set piece goals and you can stop shooting yourself in the foot and somehow nick a win from somewhere, and then confidence turns. And I still think confidence is a bigger issue than quality.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little look into Lambert's set piece pass the other day. And at Villa, he took his first 6 months at Villa, he was pulling what was left of his hair out, the set pieces. They conceded 16 set piece goals by January. But the following season, his second season at the club, they conceded 7 all season, which was the second lowest in the Premier League. So he's got, he's very much a man marking, man for man. I think there was an element of zonal stuff from Hurst. It's very much man. And he has got a history of cutting that kind of thing out, although he also has a history of conceding them when he first takes on jobs. Mm. So we will see how quickly he can work on that one.
He's no nonsense, isn't he? I'm not sure he'd have much truck with Monster Munch crisps. I reckon he's probably a really salted all the way.
I don't think he'll like the maize. We talked about maize snacks.
Absolutely.
If it's not a potato crisp, I'm not sure he's interested.
Poor form, by the way, Stu, for not checking what his favourite crisp was today. That was the obvious first question to go
didn't
for.
Didn't feel like the right time.
Sam Whittingale, we've already answered your question. Are we actually anywhere close to seeing Hughes or Bishop back in the first team? How much longer can their absence continue? So we know they're training, well,
we don't know.
We
keep thinking they're close. We've said this before, they've got back in training and there's always a little setback. So until I actually see them in the first team again, we can't answer that, can we?
Actually, Josh Broadbent wants to know, what formation do you think Lambert will go with on Saturday? 4-4-2 man, is he?
He's played a variety of different things at Norwich, and I know we're not supposed to really talk about Norwich, he'd rather not talk about it, but he played sort of with a 4-4-2, but it had a diamond midfield with Wes Houlihan at the point of that diamond, sort of dictating play from there. Wouldn't surprise me if he did something similar with Dzel. I think Stu's right when he says that what was put out on Saturday is probably as balanced as they've got. Although, for me, I'm not a huge lover of three centre backs and wing backs, but you gotta go with what you've got. I don't know what team he'll play. He probably doesn't know himself yet. He hasn't watched these guys train. He hasn't assessed these guys. He's got 4 days of training to make some very, very quick judgments on these guys.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that Shalabar will remain in a back three. He lost his man a few times. I don't think, even for his height, he's strong enough in the air defensively. That kind of backed up Hurst's claim that defensively he's not good enough yet to play in defence. I know he's seen long-term by England and Chelsea as being a defender, but I'd be amazed if he's still in a back three. I don't think Ward and Knudsen had particularly good games at wing-back, so I would think it's probably a back four.
I'd hope so.
A back to basics kind of job, I would have thought.
Andy Nichols with not so much a question but a statement. All the players need to put in a shift in from now and give 100% in every game. Have pride in wearing the badge and give you all as a player. Coming off the pitch at full time knowing they did their best. Two great examples, Mickey Stockwell and Matt Holland. Agree with you there, Andy. Chris, I think we've already answered this question, but about Hurst's biggest regrets. I think we discussed that a little bit earlier. Simon Braddy says simply, Hollywood out. Lamborghini in. I'm not going to go there with nicknames. That didn't work last time, did it? That kind of jinxed them. But obviously Lambo is the one for Lambert.
Rambo.
Rambo, yeah. Braveheart's a bit too obvious, isn't it? Even though he's that sort of
Rambo, Lambo.
I must also point out that you said that you hadn't even seen his players pretty much. It was quite funny today when our mate Phil Ham asked about the scouting network and potential changes there. And Lambert kind of bemusedly looked at him and went, I really haven't met anyone yet. Like,
this man has got an awful lot to get his head around in a very short space of time. There aren't
very,
many
very
jobs.
He's got to get his finger on the pulse straight away.
He's
going to
come coming into this job, like any job, and like within 4 days, you're going to be publicly judged on all areas of the,
yeah,
questioned by the external media on all areas of a job you've started. like 2 days prior is just madness.
On that note, he's actually meeting the fans, isn't he, on Thursday?
Yeah, he's going to do the supporters AGM, which on Thursday night, which he could very easily have swerved that.
Well, we weren't expecting him to be there at all, were we?
Anyone was expecting him. So, you know, maybe that's a good thing that gets him on board with the fans.
He's big on this, though, isn't he? He's big, big, big man on unity between supporters and the players. He's stressed it so many times today that he's almost irrelevant in this. Football's about supporters and the players. Without them, it's nothing.
Yeah,
it all sounds good to me.
Rallying cries for the fans, and I like another phrase today was, if the players make mistakes on the pitch, it's my fault, not theirs, because that's what I tell them to do. Immediately, he's taking the pressure off of his players. I think he senses that they're playing with a bit of fear factor at the moment, and you know, he wants to add a bit of fun factor, as we've been saying.
Jay Cook says, how will Lambert get goals out of Sears and Jackson? And do you see the addition of a free agent striker, preferably a target man, as an absolute must before January? Well, I think we've already answered the second part of that, saying that's probably not going to happen. It's not really a must. So how does he get goals out of Sears and Jackson in the meantime? Can you continue to play them together?
I'm not sure about them together. I'm not sure about them as a one on their own either, as individuals. And this is the problem. They're not the right players for that role, but if you're going to get more out of them, it's all about support for me from the midfield, from the wide areas, which just wasn't happening enough. It's just got that's how you do it. I'm not convinced, and I hope I'm wrong. Can any of us honestly see those two strikers scoring goals? They've got one between them this season, between now and January. I hope they can, but it's about support.
I really want to see Freddie score. Come on, Freddie.
Yeah, that's the bigger concern for me, is the goals. And Brian Clough kind of alluded to that. We're kind of focusing on the really rubbish goals they're conceding. I think if he comes in and organises people a lot more, they could maybe cut them out, but I still wonder where the goals are coming from.
Great point.
Clough was saying, if you've ever played in a football team and you don't really have a belief that you've got firepower in you, when you go behind, it's that much bigger of a body blow, because you don't believe that you've got a goal in you, let alone two, to change a match. So that's the big concern at the moment.
Andy G says, if Lambert takes us down, will Evans stick with him in League One, or more importantly, will Lambert stick with us? Any idea what his contract says about relegation?
Good question. Should have asked a bit more about that today, so it's something that I need to quiz Paul, is if, regardless of what happens this season, does he, you know, the contract is till 2021, would he stick with them?
Interesting though, wasn't it? You mentioned in your comment piece, he didn't mention relegation once today, the word, he didn't even say it.
Not once.
Which is a good sign, I think, from a positive kind of mindset point of view. Sorry, Stu, I interrupted you there.
No, that's good, yeah.
Sam Willingale just jumping in and saying, realistically, in terms of Bishop and Hughes, he says, I know they trained today, they'd make a massive difference in the next two matches. Do you think there's any chance at all of them?
I'd be shocked if either of them were...
Are they the sort of players you want to throw into, but essentially like two relegation six-pointers?
Well, Skews could potentially be injured now. I mean, he started with an ankle injury, came off half-time?
Yep, half-time.
Half-time. Can't confirm this yet, but there's been a couple of sightings of him in a boot. So if he's out, your midfield options are starting to get a little bit limited, but I can't see Hughes or Bishop suddenly being chucked into the first team, having been out as long as they have. Can you?
No, I can't... Look, obviously there's been a change of manager, but he's also not going to come in, and new managers don't come in and just chuck players into teams who have had long-term injuries, and the medical staff, much of the medical staff still remains. He'll soon know that Emi Hughes is having puffy issues with his knee after training sessions, and you don't chuck people like that. His duty of care is not to just chuck people in just because you need a result.
Tom Adeyemi. He's going to be the star. Final question for Mailbag. No, he's not. Final question for Mailbag. Jack's Larder. How can we expect to improve till January? You can't bring anyone in. We kind of already touched on that. Is it Lambert's fault if we get relegated? And finally, the most interesting part of this question. Who would win in a fight? A cat the size of a shark, or a shark that can be on land and has legs?
Didn't that tweet actually say a cat the size of the shard?
Oh, of the shard. A cat the size of the shard. Oh, sorry. I misread that. I assume he meant shark.
I read shark the first time, and that changed my thoughts. You've got
a cat the size of the shard.
That is massive.
That's a monumentally really large, the tallest building in this country. Or a shark that's got legs on land. I'm still going with the cat, I'm afraid. If the cat's the size of the shard, exactly, just squash it.
It's the cat, no problem.
Yeah, ridiculous question, Jack.
You took your wife up the shard on her birthday, didn't you?
I did, she was a lucky lady.
How far up did you go?
All the way up.
Okay.
champagne at the top.
What were the early parts of that question?
Is it Lambert's fault if we get relegated?
Is it his fault? I think there'll be quite a lot to play.
You can't really say
depends
without
on
knowing
the nature
what happens,
of the
doesn't
relegation,
it?
Doesn't it? I
if
suppose.
They go down with the points they've got now, then yes.
If they battle back and are not in the relegation zone heading into the final game, and he suddenly decides to play a team of teenage boys, then maybe it would be his fault. But I don't. I think if it's a battle, and they ultimately lose that battle, I think the handicap that he began with.
Mm.
Is a massive factor in it.
You just want them to see if they are going to go down swinging in it. Like so, they've had a few meek losses in the last few, and if they obviously they are in a really tough situation right now, who knows if they're getting out of it? But if they do go down, you at least want to see them unload the bench, the artillery, throw everything at it, don't you? And not just kind of surrender meekly. Which, by the sound of it, that's not going to happen under Lambert. So
yeah, but then Paul Hurst promised all this. High intensity or yeah, action
true.
Style of football, and it wasn't forthcoming. So I know we're all impressed by what Lambert said today, but I think we're all impressed by what Hurst had to say, and that's why the caveat is it will be what is dished up on the pitch rather than what's said in the press conferences that we'll judge him on.
And that's why I'm sad, Stu.
That's why I'm sad.
You brought up Hurst again.
Are you sad now?
No, I'm alright at the moment.
He's delirious from lack of sleep.
Because you had a big sandwich for lunch, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We've discovered our new favourite Subway, haven't we?
Yep.
Which is? Share.
Chicken pizziola, which is chicken, some kind of salami and a tomato marinara sauce.
Marinara. Yeah. Is the bread not wet then?
No.
No?
Somehow it's not.
It's good.
It's good.
And what do you wash that down with? Do you go 12-inch first of all?
Always.
Yeah.
Always 12-inch, yeah, that's the rule. Do you wash that down with like a bag of crisps or Doritos
back on crisps here I had a standard Walker ready salt and vinegar today.
Good choice. Solid.
Paprika.
Ooh, unusual.
Exotic.
Yeah, absolutely. That's you all over. Big flavours. Open minded. Friends, we've got a lot of work left to do. This is running at about 50 minutes now, isn't it? Or just over 40?
42 minutes.
42 minutes, which seems like a good decent length. Is there anything else that you'd like to discuss
The very first point of that last mailbag was what can he do to change things with what he's got at his disposal? Going back to 2012, McCarthy put players in preferred positions. And
ironically.
It's kind of ironic with the way it ended, with the criticism being square pegs, round holes, or whatever the phrase is. But the first thing he did was put Daryl Murphy from left wing to striker, and he moved Carlos Edwards from right back to right wing, their preferred positions. And but I look at this current squad, and there's not that many options to do that sort of thing, is there?
It's belief. It's belief and confidence is what he can do to change this. I don't think personnel-wise, there's not really anybody out of the side that should be in it every week. There's no glaring omissions that can come in. There's no free agents that can really, really come in. It's about belief, confidence, and a little bit of luck.
Mm.
And he might do something really left field. He's got a really good track record of playing youth at Aston Villa. He was asked about that today, and he said, if they're good enough and I think they can handle it, I'll chuck them in. So maybe someone like a Lancaster might be.
He's looked good, hasn't he?
A complete wild card.
Yeah, he's been excellent.
Yeah, we've been impressed with
him. Or even more wild card, Aaron Drynan. That would be a shock, wouldn't
straight
it?
Back,
straight back,
back
in, scores the winner, keeps town up.
You never know. He might want to have a look.
But seriously, all those players now that are out on loan, he'll be evaluating, won't he, to see if he can do anything with them, bring them. I know some of them he won't be able to bring back, but he'll want to assess everything.
He'll want to assess everything. Drynan can come back.
Good news.
Which is great news for you.
Absolutely.
And Tristan Nydam is his loan ends in January.
It's been a bit of a waste of time, hasn't it?
They've all got break clauses in January, haven't they? But again,
what about the boy Wolfenden? And is he that season long loan, that one?
He is, but yeah, there'll be a break clause in there, but we'll see. He'll be evaluating these guys. I'm sure he knows Phil Brown at Swindon well enough. He can talk to him.
Yeah,
but none of the important thing is none of these can come back now
straight away.
No, yeah. This will be January.
This is January.
So it's going to be an absolutely gigantic game. The biggest game since the last game. We say that all the time, but it is huge, isn't it, this weekend? And there's obviously the fans can help the people listening to this by turning up in their numbers and being vocal and backing the team, because it needs to be a cauldron-like atmosphere.
It was quite telling, wasn't it? Paul, the old Paul Hurst,
small Paul,
in his last press conference said that someone had mentioned to him about the QPR game, that it just didn't feel like a big game. And he's right, isn't he? But there's this one. This is massive, and they really do need a big crowd, and they need to know how big it is. I'm sure the manager will tell them how massive it is.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, as a football player, walking out into a full, not full, but within reason, loud stadium.
Makes a huge difference.
That will tell you how big a game is. Words are obviously said, but as a footballer, the best thing to show you how big an occasion something is the noise and the crowd and the smells.
Focus on that.
Yeah.
What do we want to see then? We want to basically see a fight, don't we, this weekend? That the players are properly... We don't want to see actual fight. We don't want all 11 players to get sent off or, you know, a bench-clearing brawl, as they say in baseball. But we just want to see passion and fight and just...
A horrible 1-0 win.
Exactly. Yeah.
Please.
A win. It's as simple as that now. I mean, we can talk about how it will come, the style of play, whether it's a scrap, whether it's sexy football. You know,
it's not going to be sexy football, is it? Let's be honest.
No. And I think talking to people at Norwich, that when he came in, people like Houlihan were sort of marginalised at that time. And he didn't bring them in straight away, actually. I think he was seen as a bit of a luxury, that sort of creative play, in the first few weeks. And it was only once things had started to turn that he was then able to bring in Houlihan, who obviously then became, you know, the fulcrum of the team for the next few years. But, you know, it might be that some of the more creative luxury players, inverted commas, are marginalised for the time being. It's a bit safer. But in the long run, I think, you know, maybe the better football might have to just come a little bit further down the line.
Mm. All right then, boys, any other business before we head off?
No other business.
Okay, well, it just leaves me to say that the whole press conference from today is available as a podcast, isn't it, Andy? That's a good idea of yours, so you can listen to that if you've not already. Listen to the full 22 minutes of Paul Hurst taking his first questions as Ipswich Town manager. If you do enjoy the podcast, we always say, A, subscribe via your various podcast providers, and B, leave us a review. I had many of them recently.
No.
Maybe it's linked to the crisp thing. I don't know. Anyway.
That went down really well.
It did, though, to be fair. That was some of our best work. Obviously, huge game for the Blues this weekend. Hopefully, it'll go well. Hopefully, we get a win. And we're sitting here next week talking about the next game needing a win and really building momentum. We'll be back next week. Next Monday, shall we do this again, boys? Are you all in?
I don't know. I lose track of the days.
We'll certainly do one next week. Join us then. It's been good talking to you.